Welcome and good morning and welcome to the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting of Thursday, June 8th, 06. Madam Secretary, may we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Gibson?
Here.
Mr. Christie?
Here.
Commissioner Rapa?
Here.
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Chairman
Galsall? Here. May we next have a flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Next is a public comment period. That's when the public can speak about anything that is not on the agenda. Before that, I'll say the staff reports over here on my left by the stairs there, and if you wish to look at them, they're there for your convenience. Also, if you wish to speak, make out a speaker slip. I have one for public comment, Mr. Eric Greening.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening, and as you know, I have been eagerly anticipating the process of updating the conservation element, and as you know, I've shared some perspectives with you as to how it ought to be done. I've had a conversation with a couple of members of the planning department who have indicated that their budget request for the coming fiscal year does indeed anticipate a major effort getting underway to move forward with that element, and that indeed it would be possible within that budget to accommodate in some form what I have been bringing up of trying to pull together expertise in biological and cultural resources, whether in the formalized form of advisory committees, which is my own preference, on a par with the Water Resources Advisory Committee, or in some other way to bring the knowledge of those who are willing to work as volunteers but who have professional or experiential expertise in those fields. And so I think the question I'm going to ask right now before planning staff updates is, what role will your commission have in determining the method by which the conservation element begins to be updated? And are you going to have a study session on the process before it actually gets underway, or will you just wait until there's language in front of you? I'd encourage you to actually participate in deciding what is the most useful process to make sure that the conservation element does indeed conserve all of our important resources, whether hydrological, biological, or cultural. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Anyone else wish to speak? Let me see, there's one coming here. No, this is for later. All right, seeing no one else, I'll bring him back to the commission. Next, staff updates.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Hoag, Department of Planning and Building. I just have one brief comment, and that is that we have made the final changes that your commission adopted to the rules of procedure at your last meeting, and we put final copies in front of you. Those reflect all the changes that you asked for, including the prior ones that you had reviewed. And there's no need to take action. You've already taken action on that. But I wanted you to have a copy for your records. And then I can address the public comment if you wish.
Yes, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, it's a bit repetitious because we've addressed pretty much the same comments at the last two meetings. Mm-hmm. But once again, I'll say that, yes, we do have the conservation element update in our budget request. We anticipate that will likely be in the adopted budget. We're just beginning the process and designing it. John Ufrat is the division manager that could probably speak better to the details of that, and he won't be here at this meeting until 9 o'clock. So if you want to revisit that issue, you can. I'm not going to repeat what I told you last time. In terms of what role your commission will play, of course your commission will be in the process, and there will be study sessions before the the element is actually prepared in hearing draft form. And, of course, you will also participate in the official public hearings before you make a recommendation to the board. But the exact details of where you plug in and how often are yet to be developed. I mean, we have a lot of work to do once the budget request is approved. We have to prepare a formal scope of work. We have to go out.
If general planning conformity reports remains problematic, the planning director finds you accept. On number one, the property transfer to South County Sanitation District, the negative declaration finds no significant impacts, mitigated or otherwise. While it's unclear how the use of this acreage might intensify from the existing use, the existing situation raises a significant issue under hazards and hazardous materials. As long as sludge drying beds are so close to the inadequate levee next to Arroyo Grande Creek, there is a potential for a significant release of hazardous material. It's interesting coincidence that at 9 o'clock, ballots are about to be opened for a Proposition 218 election on something that might solve this problem short-term and eventually longer-term. But in the meantime, a significant flood could deposit the sludge into Arroyo Grande Creek, the ocean, and miles of beaches. In recent years, the water on the levee has several times risen to near the danger point and, of course, has overtopped the levee in some areas. I don't know how you can meaningfully address this concern, but I ask you to inquire if there is a way and to do what you can in the action you take to at least show awareness of the hazard. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Nancy Graves.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Graves, and I'm representing Coastwalk and the Continuous California Coastal Trail this morning. I will not spend a lot of time on the trail's legitimacy, but would urge you to read the SB 908 report. I have several copies if anyone wants one. I'm also a member of the county's trails subcommittee. I'm here to support the draft PRE and to ask for the Planning Commission's support for this element. The changes we are experiencing in Slo County.
Mr. Chair, if this is comments related to your study session item, you should defer this speaker's testimony until then. We're on the consent agenda right now. We're not there yet.
You had B1 here, so I assume that was for the consent agenda.
Uh-huh.
So you want to talk about the conformity report about the county's sale of land to the sanitation district?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, okay, I'm sorry. Okay,
that doesn't sound like what you want to talk about. I hope we weren't putting a trail through there. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have an order to these meetings that
we're on the consent. Okay. Your B1 here, I thought, referred to the consent agenda. I'm sorry, I missed it. You'll get your chance a little later.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Anyone else on the consent agenda? All right, if not, I'll bring it back to the commission.
Mr. Chair, a question on the B1, and I was interested to note this was a negative declaration, not a mitigated net. I've never seen one of those before. But as I understand it, maybe Mr. Marshall or Mr. Hogue could, all we're doing here is we're transferring this land from one public agency to another. Am I correct on that? We're not changing any use. If there's some deficiencies in what they're doing, those deficiencies are going to remain just because somebody different holds the title to this land. Would I be correct on that?
There's no physical change to the property as part of this action. A conformity report is required because it involves a sale. And it's simply a sale at this point from the county to the sanitation district. And I would note that it's actually a forced sale. It's part of a legal action taken by the sanitation district. So the county in and of itself plans no physical change to that property, and I'm not aware that the sanitation district does either, although we do have the planner who prepared the report here if you have more detailed questions.
Is
your green light on?
My green light's on.
Okay. It doesn't sound like it.
I could just talk really loud.
My comments really go to the process of the general plan conformity report. And Mr. Greening's testimony actually brings up an interesting issue, I think, because we have discussed many times the incongruity of the process by which these general plan conformity determinations are made by the planning director with no public notice and no opportunity to appeal. Once they come to this planning commission, the appeal period has run, and they get forwarded to the board. And I have always maintained that there's just a fundamental structural disconnect in the way the general plan conformity reports are issued. We have not, at this point since I've been on the commission, had a member of the public who...
I believe the planning director was going to make that determination at the end of the business day, because that the fact that it appeared on our consent calendar in the public, or us could say whatever we wanted to say, would have been the opportunity for then the planning director to say, maybe this is or is not a good idea. And but I see, and this one was done on May 11th, so Ms. Christie is exactly right. The appeal period's over.
My recollection of that discussion was that we expressed our desire that the planning, that the conformity reports be handled that way, and we were advised that per staff's interpretation of the code, they couldn't do that, which I continue to be unconvinced of that interpretation.
I'll agree with my my colleagues here. I think there's something in the nature of general plan conformity reports giving us only a receive and file action to take. As I said, we've extended that to receive, file, and complain on a couple of occasions. But I think it is certainly worthy of review, and I would hope amendment. That being said, I think in this particular case, I can find that we are in conformity, as it is a transfer between public agencies of land zoned for public facilities. And so having stated for the record, at least three of us, our concerns, I'm prepared to support the receive and file action here.
And if there's no other comments, Mr. Chair, I'm willing to make a motion on the entire consent agenda.
One amendment to the minutes.
We have those.
Okay, and so this is the minutes as presented on consent, and then I will yield to the distinguished gentleman.
Second the motion. I don't have the mic. Second the motion.
I haven't made it yet, but I'll move that.
Let me go to the public. Are there any other comments on any other on the consent agenda on any of the items? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. A motion is
on the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Any more discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So carried.
Okay.
I guess at this point, let me get my...
5 minute break.
We want to take a 5 minute break because the Parks Commission will come up and join us here on the table, and we'll rearrange the chairs to do that. So we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Kelly?
They have four down there.
You ready? Ready, Ellie?
Everyone back? We'll reconvene, and Madam Secretary, may you announce... I've got to get over. The study session, item number one.
Item one is a joint study session with the Parks and Recreation Commission on a request by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend the county general plan by adopting a park and recreation element and rescinding the 1968 recreation element, the 1991 trails plan, and the 1988 parks and recreation master plan. County file number LRP 2005-00015.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, before we get going, as we go through this study session and into the formal hearing of it at a later date, I'll note that I have one small area conflict of interest in that a couple of trail corridors do come immediately by my home property. And so at a point, I've talked to park staff here, and I think we can surgically isolate the particular issues, and I will vacate the premises for those.
All right. Thank you.
On a similar note, I perhaps will have also a conflict, so I'll
All right.
do the same.
And another issue, since I left the Parks Commission, there's only one commissioner left, Pandora Nash Carney, who I recognize. I also know Dorothy Jennings, the District 1, but I wonder if the Parks Commission could introduce themselves.
I was going to turn it over to staff and let them do that how they wish to do it. All right. Peter, I don't know if you're on there.
Turn myself on.
There you go.
We get him every once in a while.
My mom's watching. I'm so flummoxed.
Mrs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity. I'm Pete Jenny. I'm the Parks Manager. Excuse my back to my own commission and my side to half of the Planning Commission. I would like to begin by introducing your counterparts on the Planning Commission, on the Parks Commission. I'm just going to walk through district by district. Mr. Chris Clark, immediately over my shoulder, like a good parrot. So, it'll be an interesting ride. So, and I wanted to explain briefly. We have a presentation for you this morning, kind of setting the stage for what we intend to do and the discussion that will ensue. But I wanted to just set the stage by sharing with you a bit about what we saw as the driving force behind why we're here today. Park staff has seen for some time the need to lay a foundation, really, for the new century. We have issues of growth that you're well aware of that are pressuring, shaping this county. We want to find a way to be proactive and not reactive to that growth that's taking place. Unfortunately, if we look to the current recreation element, which dates back to 1968, it really doesn't provide us with much of a foundation. And I will be clear with you, this is not really a revision. That document is so old that it didn't even really provide us the base to work with. What we're trying to do is provide a new base document. Just to give you an idea as to the lapse of that 38-year-old document, it foresees the time when we may have as many as 300,000 visitors overwhelming our parks in this county. We're currently hosting over 3 million visitors. On an annual basis. So you can imagine that it's time for an update. And I want to share with you one other thing that going into this process, we went in eyes open that there were going to be some major issues we're going to have to deal with. We needed to develop a program that was going to be sustainable. We needed to develop a program that was going to provide a very fair, a very objective way of distributing any growth in facilities and services that we provided throughout the county. And we also needed to recognize that there was a need to balance this public recreation need, which we'll be talking a lot about, with the private sector and not getting in the way, particularly of things like agriculture. Finding a way that we could kind of thread the path and provide for public recreation without putting undue burdens on agricultural operations, as an example. So with that in mind, we had set out picking up a process that had begun in the early 90s, was the last time the park staff made an attempt to update the rec element. That kind of ran out of gas because it required that Herculean effort to get it all put together. When I became parks manager, we renewed the effort when we had time, and we're going to talk to you a bit about just how that process worked. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Jan to talk about where we have been.
Let's see if I can do two things at once here. Today we're going to provide you some background and some general background, and I would say that this this meeting today is very general as well. I think the whole intent is to provide some way of the Planning Commission dialoguing with the Parks and Rec Commission, who has literally been steeped in this for quite a number of years, and we felt that that dialogue was very important. So in terms of what we're doing today, we're going to go over a little bit of the background to see how we got to where we are today. We're going to indicate what the next steps are, clarify maybe perhaps some of the Park and Rec Element's intent, go over a little bit over the major issues, open it up for a dialogue between the two commissions, and then also this is the chance for the public to provide some initial comments on the revised draft, as well as this is their chance to comment on the draft EIR. As Pete mentioned, this document will consolidate various documents the Parks Department has been working with the last few years. I've gotten some frantic emails from residents saying, oh, I understand the trails plan is going away and you guys are getting rid of all the trails. And that is not the case. The trails plan will go away, but the whole intent was to take all these documents and incorporate them into one. It makes it easier for the public and actually, very frankly, it makes it easier for staff as well. Going back to the history of the public review draft Parks and Recreation Element, some of you may remember that back in 1994 we were actually working on a draft element. We and the commission conducted workshops to help create that element, as well as talking to members of the public to see what their concerns, what they wanted, what the project list should include. In 1996, the planning department actually put together a public review draft, Parks and Recreation Element. We took that show on the road and went out to the communities. Many commissioners at that time attended as well and got input about that document. It went to the Parks and Rec Commission. I would say the basic consensus that we heard was that the project list wasn't bad, but that the document to some extent was a little bit onerous and could we clean it up, make it a little bit more simple, more public friendly. Due to staffing issues, other priorities, it sat. And about in 2000, we got together again. We formed what we called a Park and Rec Element team and talked about how we wanted to revise the document. We went forward. We hired a consultant, realizing that had only 15 people in them, and we had some workshops that had 50. We received over 60 letters and emails, and those letters and emails included responses from community services districts as well as the community advisory councils, and basically outlining where we had gone wrong, where we had gone right, and what we should do to change it. And very frankly, at the workshops and most of the letters and emails, they're usually about projects. I think one of the first things people do when they get this element is they go to where they live and they look at the map and they say, what's in my area? And as a result, that is typically the comments we receive. When it went to the Parks and Recreation Commission, these were notice public hearings. I have a noticing list that's about 800 people. We also let the newspapers know and the radios. And in most cases, there were ads in the newspaper or articles in the newspaper actually talking about the review schedule and what the commission was going to do. This review, as I mentioned earlier, went from September of 2004 to October 2005. As some of you remember, 2004 was an election year. As a result, we had had previously Park and Rec commissioners that had reviewed the document that were replaced in the new January 2005. As a result, there was some discussions in bringing the new commissioners up to speed and trying to get their input into the document as well. So that took us a little bit longer. Again, we had public comment at these meetings. Where we got the most attendance is when we had scheduled for the projects, and then we got quite a few people that attended. At that meeting, we had quite a few people that were from bicycle trail groups, but we also had a lot of agriculturalists that showed up and expressed the concern that we were not adequately clarifying when we were going to require agricultural projects to provide trails. The other concern was that there were quite a few trails proposed in remote areas that went through agricultural land, and basically the question was why we were doing that. In order to resolve the concerns, we formed what we called an ag trail team, which brought in major components from the agricultural community. We had somebody from vegetable growers, somebody that raised cattle. We had the Ag Commissioner's office there. We had a member from the task force. In addition, we had our trails people there, bicycles, equestrians. And we sat around a table and we had two meetings where we I wouldn't say we duked it out, but I know there was frustration at times. There's always a little bit of confusion, but we eventually talked and I think came to some conclusions. To go further, we then met with the Ag Commissioner's Office, Linda Kennecke, to be specific, and Parks sat down, and we literally worked out the trail issues and talked about which trails were really important to us, which were probably very unlikely to us for us to even get to in the terms of this element, and we worked out a compromise. And I think it was a fairly good compromise in that when we went back to the Park and Rec Commission with the revisions, I think members of the agricultural community expressed, I wouldn't say support, but felt we had come a long way and were more supportive of what we were doing. Those revisions, as well as other changes the Park and Rec Commission had recommended, were then all put into a document, and then in October of 2005, that's when they recommended that those changes be incorporated into a Planning Commission review draft document, and that's the document before you today. And that document was released in March of 2006, and the draft environmental impact report that goes with it was released in April of 2006. The deadline for comments on the draft EIR are June 16th, 2006. I think to date we've received one letter. On July 13th, 2006, the final EIR will be available to your commission, and the Planning Commission will start its formal review of this document, of the draft PRE. We're hoping, and you see the question marks there, that by the fall of 2006 we'll be able to prepare a Board of Supervisors Parks and Recreation Element draft. No pressure. In late 2006, we're hoping that the Board of Supervisors will be able to adopt this element. And just for members of the public, I think all the documents and the notices state how you can comment on them, but the way you can comment is you can come to the various public hearings, you can send us emails, letters, or faxes, and again, the addresses are indicated in the document as well as in the notices. And in terms of the draft EIR, people can comment on that today, or they can send emails, letters, or faxes, but the deadline, again, is June 16th, 2006. That a skateboard park at Clark's Park will still be a main priority. And what we actually do in parks is we go out to the community and we create what are called park master plans or a natural area plan. And those, in that case, we go to the community and we often conduct a survey and then we hold workshops and we talk about Clark Park specifically and say, you as a community, what do you want in that park? And then we do what's called a master plan that actually does a physical plan, and we're going to put the skate park here, we're going to put the volleyball courts here, play equipment here. There's no way that a park and rec element, which has a much longer line, can be that specific. And so we do the specific recreation components through a master plan, not through this element. Also, in most cases, for the larger facilities and for the parks, we don't say that we need a park on the corner of Foothill and Patricia. What we do say is that the community of San Miguel, the community of Shandon, whatever, needs more parks, and we define whether they're community, neighborhood, or regional parks, but we're not specific as to location, and that's for a number of reasons. One reason, very frankly, is it makes people kind of nervous if you show a park on their property. A second reason is if that property is vacant, in 2 years, we don't know that somebody's going to come by and say, okay, it's time, I want to develop my property. If we've shown a park in that location, we at that point have to come up with money to either buy the property or kind of say adios to the park. And if the park goes away, that means we have to do a general plan amendment to now designate a park somewhere else. So by keeping it flexible, we still maintain the opportunity to have a park in that community, but we're not tied to a specific site. Many people get up also and raise the issue, well, you don't say you're going to do a joint use agreement with X organization. And if you look at the policies in the document, and that's the project list in the back, you'll see that each community says, we will try to do joint use agreements. And we don't really care with who, as long as it's a benefit to the overall park system. And so We are not specific who we'll do joint use agreements with, but that policy is contained in the element over and over again, and it is contained in the project list. And another thing we do not do is we do not prioritize individual projects. What we've found over time is that if the element prioritized projects, sometimes you'll hit a snag on that project, and you're better off really maybe putting that project on hold and going to different projects. So rather than prioritizing individual projects in the element, what we do is we do it through our capital CIP. Yeah, and basically every 5 years we will look at the list of projects and then have them reassessed. And also what we will be doing, how we will be prioritizing projects is through the decision tree, which is explained in Chapter 5. With that, I'm going to give it to Chris Clark.
Good morning. My name is Chris Clark again, and I'm going to walk through very quickly the contents of the Parks and Recreation element. It might be helpful, if you have it, to turn to the table of contents, and you can see rapidly how this is laid out. The purpose of this discussion, really, and you will have lots of time today and during the hearing process to dig into the ins and outs of the language and et cetera, but I just want to give a brief overview of the structure of this and what the thinking behind it was. There are many ways to put this kind of an element together, and this is what we did. In Chapter 1, of course, introductory material, setting the stage for the work, the mission of parks in the county, how this was adopted, some of the legal background. Chapter 2 begins with the discussion of parks. And we distinguish between parks and recreation, of course, parks being principally the facilities at which you do recreation. This doesn't work 100%, but it's generally true. So it defines types of parks and classifications, looks at the existing park resources that we have in the county, and then importantly has goals, objectives, and policies for identifying and picking new park resources. Chapter 3, then, is recreation, and that's what you do at these facilities. And it talks, of course, about the value and benefits of recreation, and I think permeated throughout the element is a notion that recreation is not something that we all see as mandatory, but definitely is necessary. It's the time that we need to spend outside getting ourselves in better shape, which I promise soon.
It's good to get it off your chest.
That's right.
This has been therapy for all of us.
I think an important thing to recognize about a county, especially a county as rural as the Board of Supervisors, some exciting new thing, we call them flavors of the month, paintball place or whatever, and I couldn't possibly think of an example that hasn't been a problem somewhere or doesn't have a constituency. And oftentimes these can sort of cloud the need for what's been being worked on for many years. And also the very important need to understand the long-term implications of parks and facilities, especially funding, environmental issues with the development of them. And it gives a very regular and thoughtful process for the Parks and Recreation Commission especially and the Parks Department to make determinations about priorities and projects. Chapter 6 then, also very important, deals with funding of parks. These are oftentimes difficult to get funded, and quite often facilities are brought online or championed without proper funding, especially for the long term, and we added in the title very importantly, the concept of maintenance, because just buying a park is one thing, but the maintenance, long-term maintenance of the program always eclipses what that initial capital outlay was. List of definitions for words in Chapter 7. Then the appendices included in the element include the very important Appendix A, and this is the project list. We call it many pages broken up by the county's areas, general plan areas. And these list existing facilities and those facilities which have been determined to be of priority for the county for future development. It's important to note that all of those on the list would require a future level of approval. This doesn't approve these projects through this process. These projects are the priority, the important projects for the county in the future. The list is anticipated to be modified over time, but as any particular project comes off that list, it would go to your commission, it would go to the Board of Supervisors for approval, it would go through CEQA review, et cetera, et cetera. We also have other appendices, the recreational use statute, to put this in context. Trail standards, a very important component of the background for this. List of funding sources, the capital project rating criteria, how we sort of rate these in terms of costs and issues. And then at the end, we put, we gathered together all of the goals, objectives, and policies. And Appendix F actually will become a very, I think, useful tool as we go into the hearings because they are all in one place, and I think helpful for that. So that's just a quick layout of the Parks and Rec element. We mentioned, I think Pete mentioned earlier, that there were some major issues that were discussed, dealt with through this process, and we've captured them here on the screen in three broad categories. They got into much narrower discussions, and I won't spend much time on it, but I think it is important to repeat the concept that these were addressed, these were the subject of many meetings, lots of discussion, and we hope that we have embodied in both the element and the environmental impact report, if not perfect resolutions, at least recognition of the importance of these issues. Sustainability, the ability to, again, keep these facilities alive, maintained, working for a long time, that we won't leap into a project without our eyes wide open. Again, a uniform decision-making process, the, as I described earlier, the decision tree in Chapter 5, so that everyone can have a fair shake at addressing both the Parks Commission and then on up through the decision-making process their own desires for changes in this list and development of park resources. And then third, balancing agriculture and public access. It just, we have to be very candid. This is a very important issue. We're, trails are tough. We're long linear pathways that cross many areas and properties and things like this, and going to require a lot of cooperation and planning. Again, Jan discussed, we had great discussions with the agricultural community about this. We had some tough discussions, but I think policies were put in place to help balance both the need for recreation and trails and protection of agricultural resources. So we'll talk quite a bit more about that as we get into the hearing process. We also prepared, not quite as fun but necessary, a draft environmental impact report for this element. One of the important things to note about this, I think, is that the process, the development of the Parks and Recreation element, developed in accordance with the policies of the element, that most of the impacts can be mitigated. We do have an exception, and that is with air quality impacts, and this is quite common. We know that any time a large area is going to be cleared, bulldozed, whatever, say for a soccer field, it's going to be very difficult not to have construction-related impacts. They're very common. So we were took a conservative stance on that. And we also know that with other areas, agriculture is dealt with in the EIR, biology, geology. There are is the great potential for impacts if we're not careful in the way we develop these facilities. But again, if they're done in accordance with the policies and the mitigation measures in the environmental impact report, we believe that they can be done without significant lasting impacts. I just want to mention quickly that we set this hearing or this workshop today at a time a week before the close of the comment period for the environmental impact report. And this was to give an opportunity for us to make a more public announcement to the public that they can They still have a week to send in their cards and letters about the environmental impact report. And then you all will get the formal final environmental impact report with those comments and responses to the comments when the hearing process begins. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Jan.
Basically, for your commission's information, we have time. Parks has time reserved for this element on your July and August agendas. We are recommending that you begin review at the beginning of the document and proceed from there. However, that you reserve a specific time to discuss projects, because I think, quite frankly, that's when most of the people will show up to come and provide comments. So we would say, at the point we maybe determine how quickly we're going through this, we reserve a specific day and time, and then we'll re-advertise that you will be talking about that component. And we'll likely need to schedule a time for cleanup as well to go. You know, you're going to make some suggestions. We're going to need to come back with corrections, and that would be a fairly easy format. With that, we'd like to conclude our presentation with some statements from two of the Park and Rec commissioners that have actually been on the commission probably the longest and have gone through some of this process the longest. Two of these commissioners were part of our Park and Rec element team that's kind of started this whole 2003 version, and they stuck with us and went to all the workshops with us. and not that the workshops were uncomfortable in any means, but, you know, it's a lot of commitment of time, and they've made that commitment. And because they were the two representatives from the Park and Rec Commission. After that, we'd like your two commissions to, you know, provide discussion, comments, and questions that hopefully we can all clarify, or we can come back and report at another time. And then we'd also like you to take public comment and questions regarding the draft PRE and the draft EIR. So with that, I'd like to introduce Dorothy Jennings and then Pandora Nash Carner.
Dorothy, just pull the mic up in front of you, the one that's small.
And the green light has to be on and the red light is off.
And red light off, yes.
Can you see green?
Here you go.
Am I on? I am on. Good morning. A 35-year-old recreation element is an ancient document. A failed attempt to revise it in 1996 is a poor track record. Notwithstanding, 3 years ago, the Parks Commission appointed two of its members to be part of an advisory committee. The committee would be reviewing the first administrative draft of the Parks and Rec element. Thus began my 3-year journey working with Parks personnel, Jan DeLeo and Pete Jenny, and consultant Chris Clark, and the Parks Commission, leading to the purpose of our joint study session today. That journey has taken me north, south, and west to almost all the workshops conducted throughout the county. The faces were different, but the sentiments were similar. Citizens expressed sadness for land and trails once freely enjoyed and now taken away because of development or changing attitudes. They also spoke with sourness about county plans not executed because of lack of funds. But more importantly, when asked to talk about the future, optimism filled the air. Citizens were engaged as they spoke to us of the types of recreational interests they had or wanted to pursue, everything from horseshoes to horseback riding, lounging to hiking, model airplane flying to birding. I learned that going to a park alone is not alone when you're walking your dog. Youth activities were an important topic, is the importance the commissioners placed in having an updated element. Public participation has shaped the document. The dedication and guidance of staff, Jan DeLeo and Pete Jenny and consultant Chris Clark, took the task has been outstanding. We hope you, the Planning Commission, can support the draft parks and recreation element being introduced today. We look forward to discussion today and your recommendations coming from public hearings in July. Thus, my 3-year journey has me sitting here with you today.
Good morning. Is this close enough?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Project, huh? Thank you for having us here today. Again, my name is Pandora Nash Carner. Since 1989, the Park Commission has worked with park staff to ensure that our very limited resources are maximizing the public's access to park and recreation services and to achieve measurable results for improving the quality of life while providing economic and public health and safety benefits for the entire county. Just like you, our commission is appointed, and just like you, we're volunteers volunteering our time to make the county a better place to live. I've served on the commission for nearly 16 years, and we've been working on this document in one form or another for the last decade, and even before that. And as Dorothy said, the Park Commission has traveled the county to gather public input. Unfortunately, it was usually on cold, rainy nights in unheated little halls, but people turned out, and they were passionate. We heard person after person describe what they wanted and what they didn't want from a very, hopefully, healthy future park system. As Jan said, the park staff, Pete Jenny, the manager, Jan DeLeo, senior planner, and consultant Chris Clark, have been wonderful. They have done an outstanding job in preparing the draft element. And what this draft element is not, it is not about a trail easement over one person's property. It is not about cramming a little tiny park at the end of some future subdivision. What the document is about shaping our communities and providing a livable county and creating a desirable and lasting quality of life throughout this century. We're very fortunate. We have a remarkable working relationship with county staff, and it's based on years and years of integrity and trust. Pete and Jan have responded absolutely precisely to the years of public input and the discussion about the wants and the needs for multi-use trails, community centers, swimming pools, soon, natural areas, active and passive recreation opportunities. What this document is, it's a compilation of hundreds and hundreds of people's comments, people of all ages, people of all abilities, and people of all viewpoints. Yet there has been an enormous and very interesting journey in creating balance. This document also reflects the views of agriculturalists and their concerns. And one section was actually rewritten and has been adapted in respect of the agricultural community and to incorporate their suggestions and their viewpoints. I believe that the purpose of the park and rec element is to address the protection and sustainable development of parks and natural areas and the environment, to promote and enhance the quality, safety, and diversity of outdoor recreational opportunities in this county, to advance public awareness and education as to the value of parklands and to our natural areas, and to act as a resource concerning acquisition, development, protection of parklands in the future. The Park Commission strongly believes that what we did is what we should be doing. And we believe we did it with balance, and it was important for us to do so. Our environment and our economy are interlinked, and they're interdependent. It seems difficult to place sometimes the price on the ability to walk along a trail or the thrill of seeing a bird never having seen before, or biking along a quiet lane or riding a horse or watching someone ride the horse, or the warm pleasure of watching an infant, yours or someone just along the seashore, building a sandcastle for the first time. These are the intangible benefits of parks. However, amenities do have value. And just like other infrastructure, they can be treated the same way in an economic analysis. Some of them are a little more tough to evaluate, like the value of listening to birds and trees. But there are many national studies that show that parks create health benefits and reduced health care costs, reduction in incarceration rates, juvenile crime, and gang activities. Increased property near the elfin forests automatically sell for about 10%, sometimes 15%, more than houses nearly identical two blocks away. What's interesting is it's in the ads, house for sale next to the elfin forest. And very ironically, some of the very people who fought against the Bob Jones Bikeway, a few of them have since sold their properties, and in the ads, quote, adjacent to the Bob Jones Bikeway, end quote. It's used as a selling feature. Your commission knows probably better than most people in the county about the growth issues and the pressure for development in our county. In 1970, our population was 106,000, and today it's nearly 260. That's 146% increase. And in that time, we've had a 12% increase, 12% increase of park lands and park opportunities. We're not keeping up. And you know as well as we know that the state figures show that we're going to double, or could double, in the next 30 years. And that's why we absolutely must immediately begin to plan for the current needs and the needs of the future. What the Park and Rec element does is it sets a very broad framework to do just that while enhancing the quality of life, the physical, the mental, the economic, and ensuring a vision for all. And I want to quote my favorite person, Wallace Stegner, who wrote of the idea of wilderness, the idea of open space and parks. Quote, "The idea is something that has helped form our character and shaped our history as a people, and something will have gone out of us as a people if we ever let it be destroyed. If we pollute the last clean air and push our paved roads through to the last of the silence, we need our parks, not only for genetic banks and beauty spots, but for spiritual renewal, the recognition of identity, and the birth of awe. We simply need the natural areas and the parks available to us, for they are the means of reassuring ourselves of our own sanity as creatures, as a part of the geography of hope. Our quality of life, our very health and well-being depend in the most basic ways on the protection of the nature that surrounds us in San Luis County. It depends on the accessibility of natural areas and recreation opportunities, as well as the preservation of landmarks that illustrate our historic continuity. That is what the Park and Rec element is all about. It is a vision for a better future for residents, future residents, and our visitors. It is a mechanism for achievement. Parks are a place for Johnny and Susie to swing, to learn to run, to learn to play. But parks are much more. They provide us a respite and the space and the place and the quiet to seek our own soul. And it's time. Every time we miss an opportunity, it is lost forever. Every day, every week, every month that the county operates without a Park and Rec element, we lose those opportunities to protect habitat, to enhance the economy, to preserve our cultural places, our historic resources, and to create well-being. It's been a long journey. We're glad to be here today, and we look forward to the process. The Park and Rec element is a very decisive part of our future, and thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy and Pandora. Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. I will turn it back to you and invite discussion with the Park Commission and the Planning Commission.
All right. Thank you. At this point, the other three commissioners, do you wish to make any comments at this point? None? Paul, you go ahead.
Paul Teixeira, Parks Commission. Would just like to commend Pandora and Dorothy for the job that they've done. Went to a couple of those meetings on those dark, rainy nights. Came down in a Pullman with Jan. And the thing that I will say is the passion that you see in these two ladies is expressed throughout the commission. We all come from different districts. We all serve different supervisors. And we all have a different vision. But we all have the passion for parks and open space and trails in this county and to make this a better place to live for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd just like to mention quickly that both these elements I've studied thoroughly, and I'm very pleased so far what's been presented, and very pleased that you're all here this morning, and I really look forward to working with you and getting this thing updated that needs to be done as soon as we can do it. So any other commissioners have any brief comments on what's been presented so far? I don't want to get into an issue, just maybe address what or comment, Bob?
Right, I had a question of staff. You said the comments on the draft.
And I guess, secondly, and just sort of on an overall basis, throughout the documents and throughout the reports and the comments, we talk about limited resources and limited funding. In my opinion, those are self-imposed. We have the ability to fund our parks, our programs, our open space, our trails. We just have to make that choice. So if each of us can keep that in mind, and I know you all have, and I think we all have, I'm pretty sure, and relay those to our supervisors, relay those to the general public, to come out and support. I think this comment of limited resources can go away and we can move on, because to me, park and park programs and recreation programs are so much more than just an element to our general plan. And I think that the ramifications or the results from these programs and facilities will come back in benefit 10 times over. So I do commend your staying with us for all this time and for giving us, at least in my opinion, a document that's excellent.
Thank you.
I'd like to echo Commissioner Rappa's comments and thank each and every one of you for the above and beyond the call of duty commitment that you've put into this update. It's long overdue. It's very well written. It's very well organized, and I am really looking forward to the joint discussion with our colleagues today to provide more input and learn more about the work that you all have done. I do have some questions for staff, I think, to clarify how we proceed from here and also to kind of frame our discussion as well. We have two documents before us. One is the draft element, and the second is the draft EIR. Now, the draft EIR, we're going to have to take an action on subsequently in a hearing that's not a workshop. And because the public comment period hasn't closed yet, and we'll be getting some comment today, are we going to be going through the draft EIR today, or are we simply going to be focusing on the element and then going through the EIR when it's final? Did staff have an idea of how that was going to go?
The idea was that as part of your deliberations on the element at your public hearings, that you would then have the final EIR in hand and that you would be able to do both of those together. Ultimately, at the end, you'd need to certify the final EIR but also adopt the element and a number of other amendments that have to be done to keep everything consistent.
So for the purposes of today's workshop, we're focusing on the element itself.
Yes.
And the discussion will be about what's contained in the element, not what's in the EIR. Thanks for that clarification. The second comment I'd like to make is sort of to frame the discussion that's going to take place. And correct me if I'm off base in any way here, but the value that I see in taking all of these various plans, the trails plan, the natural areas plan, and the recreation plan, and blending them into a single document is not just an organizational benefit, but there's a practical benefit that comes from adopting this as an official element of the general plan, in that there will be enforceable policies and standards that we as a commission can then apply, and staff obviously in preparing their recommendations, to projects that come before us. Is that an accurate way to sort of sum that up? I'm seeing heads nodding, so.
Well, if I can just make a quick comment along those lines, this wasn't stated before. The Parks and Recreation element is what's called an optional element of the general plan. You have 7 mandatory elements that you have and have to have in your general plan, but this is an optional element, and it means that the county has decided or will decide that this is an important enough issue to do just what you say, and that is to capture in an element for land use decisions these policies and programs. So that it really is important to understand it in that context. Yeah.
So it's an optional element, but once it's adopted, it carries the same weight and effect as all of the other elements.
That's correct.
Okay. And so with that in mind, I'd like to say that for me, what I think the greatest benefit of having an adopted element that we can then compare our projects to for compliance and conformity is that the incredible amount of public participation that has gone into this element, I'm going to envision every single one of those hundreds of people that participated in this. I'm going to envision them all sitting in those chairs, which are largely empty on a week-by-week basis as these projects come before us. Normally, who
patients today is that you have made a particularly eloquent case for our park system. And out of, I know, hours of, in some cases, contentious discussion, your introduction and your comments today, I think, have distilled the great commonality that residents of this county have in their love for their park system, and you have elevated it to a place where it becomes particularly important. And I think in doing so, you've done a tremendous service, first by recognizing the common interest, which so often gets a little bit lost in the noise of discussion, but I think the intent is so beautifully clear here that when we get to points of discussion where something has to be traded off against something else or a difficult decision has to be made, I think you've framed the intent beautifully, and for that I particularly thank you. I have a number of more specific questions of just how the element reacts, but I might save that if we're going to continue some discussion after some public comment.
That brings us to the point where I will go to the public comment, but before, we're at our break time, so do you think we could be back here in about 12 minutes, quarter after 10? Will that work for everyone? All right, we'll do that. And following her will be Eric Greening.
Okay, my second try this week.
There you go.
Still get through.
I'm Nancy Graves. I'm representing Coast Walk and the Continuous California Coastal Trail this morning. I'll not spend your time on the trail's legitimacy, but would urge you to read the SB 908 report. And I have two copies here. I'd be happy to give the board the commission. I'm here to support the draft PRE and to ask for the Planning Commission's support for this element. The changes we are experiencing in SLO County require that we plan for growth and a healthy way of life. I was amused by Cruz Bustamante's candidate statement on health insurance and his commitment to lose weight. But this is a health crisis. We must plan and encourage everyone to maintain healthier lifestyles, or we all pay. I'm pleased that Parks and Rec has recognized private property owners and addressed many of their concerns in this element. I'm also pleased that a more realistic view of trail types is addressed than a strict adherence to multi-use trails. In my quick read of the project lists, I believe the Hibbard Preserve, which had some question marks about ownership, is owned by the Nature Conservancy. I encourage you to give the California Coastal Trail the same prominence as the De Anza Trail in the PRE. Not only as a statewide recognized trail, but also as a maintenance and funding opportunity. The maps can have a placeholder in the legend identifying the California Coastal Trail as something to be working towards without identifying an alignment. The alignment of the California Coastal Trail is going to be an amalgam of many different trails in all 15 coastal counties. and will have to be worked out within each county's plan. Its recognition can only help the master plan of this county. The principle of continuity is the most important value of this world-class trail, and providing this placeholder in the maps will help to signal the county's commitment without specifying an alignment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting for the next speaker, the Hibbert Preserve is actually owned by the Land Conservancy of San Luis County.
Thank you.
It used to be owned by the Nature Conservancy.
Mr. Eric Greening is next. Following him will be Joy Fitzhugh.
I'm Eric Greening, and today representing EcoSlo, the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County, on this issue. EcoSlo is strongly in support of this element and urges that it not be weakened in any way. A few specific comments and questions. We're especially concerned that you realize that all facilities for non-motorized transportation that may be implemented pursuant to this element are valuable not only for their health and recreational benefits, but as important components of our circulation system consistent with our area plan circulation elements and our regional transportation. Not preempt land use authorities from requiring improvements needed for pedestrian and bicycle circulation not specifically relevant to recreation. Safe bicycle and pedestrian ways, such as safe routes to school, are as important as adequate roads and should always be part of your planning activities. In Appendix A, in seven places, starting with page 2, the Juan Bautista de Anza Trail is described as extending along Highway 1 north to Price Canyon. That is erroneous. From the Santa Maria River to Price Canyon, it largely followed and should still follow the coast. I join Coastwalk in urging that you give the California Coastal Trail equal weight. There are lots of places I've looked for it and not found it. Relative to Appendix 4.0, thank you for showing how consistency can be found with open space policies, but the policies on major ecosystems and wildlife corridors should also be referenced. Again, EcoSlo strongly supports this element, as do I. Thank you.
Thank
One
you.
Quick question for Mr. Greening. I tried to follow along with your comments, but you were talking so fast to get into your 3 minutes, I couldn't get them all. But the reference to factions of the Chumash,
Do
you have a recommended, a more culturally appropriate word you'd like to see substituted?
What I suggested is independent political entities.
Thank you.
I mean, you could say that the states of the United States are factions, and I guess when water is concerned, they are, but they're actually independent political entities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Joy Fitzhugh, and then after her, Ken Whittle.
Would help our time if the second person could come to the other mic, too.
Good morning, Joy Fitzhugh, Farm Bureau, and sorry about being bundling up, but it's cold out there. I'm representing San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau today, and I want to thank the staff and Chris and the Park Commission, and especially Linda Kennecke and those ag people who sat on that review committee after we had the rather contentious, shall I say, meetings, because there have been some major changes with the recommendation of 14 trails to be removed, and we definitely agree with the Park Commission's recommendation. I think they were premature. I do feel that there's 3 to 6 more that could be considered for removal, but I think on a whole, we're really pleased that the Park Commission and the staff have come a long ways in looking at, going out and seeing some of those roads and areas, looking at them and seeing that they were premature, and we do appreciate that. Thank you.
Ms. Fitzhugh, I presume you will send us your list of 3 to 6.
I will do that when it comes to that.
We'll do it prior to the meeting so we can have time to think about it.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Ken Whittle, and then after him, Brian Brown.
Ken Whittle, Napomo. I'd like to support the PRE and thank the staff for the workshops that I attended in multiple areas at multiple times and the effort that they put in and the support of the community. And I'd ask that the commission I'd like to recognize the commission's effort and recognize that what they've said is powerful, and I hope that we all recognize the importance, and that one commonality that we all have is the recreation and the positiveness of our commitment to recreation in the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Brown, and following him will be Adam Fukushima.
Good morning. I also would like to thank the Parks and Recreation Committee for their hard work that they've put in on this project. I know it's been a long project. I also, in attending some of those meetings, had expressed my concerns with trails located on Santa Rosa Creek Road and Cypress Mountain Road, which you have the Parks and Recreation Committee has recommended to be deleted from the element. And I, as representing all of the property owners along that road, we have a concern as far as the safety. We would even ask that consideration be made to declare it a spandex-free zone, that the danger of bicyclists sharing that road with vehicles is extreme. I asked the parks to look at that road, to drive over it, as far as contemplating putting a 26-foot wide combination horseback and hiking bicycle trail there, that the sheer economics of trying to build it on a cliff seem rather like it would eat up a lot of the fun
to read, and very detailed and very fair as well. I remember going to some of the meetings and seeing all the contentious debate going on, and it was quite a challenge, and I'm glad that I didn't have to come up with a draft after all of that. I'd like to remind you all that 60% of residents in Slo County are either obese or overweight. And for that reason, we really need to have trails incorporated into the fabric of our community. We need to get people to start thinking about incorporating fitness into their normal everyday life. And if there's anything I'd agree with about spandex, is that we need to get people to start integrating commuting into their life without thinking of bicycling and fitness as something they do afterwards, after work, or something that's secondary. So I would encourage you to think about that, and I'd like to thank the commission for this report. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the last speaker slip I have. Is there anyone else?
I'm sorry I'm late. I'm Kathy Hustis. I'm from Creston. And I had a horse colicking this morning, so I was a little behind schedule. I want to thank everybody that participated in the coalition with the agriculture. I'm on your Trails Advisory Committee. I'm a volunteer with the National Park Service with the ONZA Trail. My badge this morning. We have Margaret Stiles is going to be visiting us next week from the National Park Service, so we're excited to show her the little pieces of the ONZA Trail we've been able to put in. And I think you've done a wonderful job. I think the compromises that we've made are outstanding. My only concern is for the future, and I think it'd be wonderful if we could have a voluntary group workshop where we actually come up with an image of what we would like to see our county down the road. I live on Highway 229 out of Creston. It's a one-and-a-half-lane highway. We have lots of spandex, but they're not as big a problem as the motorcycles. If there's as far as development is concerned, we've got parcels on that road going to 20 acres. So the changes are here. Many of us have made our livings with these changes, and we're also in agriculture. And so perhaps if we look to see what we want this county to look like for our grandchildren, maybe we can solve some of these problems, because it's not a piecemeal plan. We need to be looking 20 years down, because in the last 20 years there have been a lot of changes in the county. Good work, and thank you all so much. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Anyone else? If not, I'll look. Well, you've already spoken, sir. All right, we'll let you throw in one more little item. And I'm thinking, I'll mention that later.
One little item.
State your name, please.
My name is Brian Brown. One other item, too. I noticed in the environmental impact report that no mention is made of, as far as the horseback trails, the introduction of noxious weeds to the spreading of them to other areas. And I'd just like some that to be addressed by it also.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? What I'm proposing, we'll bring it back to the commission now, and if something new comes up in our discussion, that I'll allow the public to address those items later if you so wish. So I'll bring it back to the commission. You want to start, Bruce?
No, Bob was first close to the microphone.
Okay.
I have some things.
All right, go
just
ahead, Bob.
Just leaning forward, that's all. I had a couple questions, in response to public comment, why isn't the California Coastal Trail in there? I don't know who wants to answer that. I expected to see it on this big, and I really like this map. This is, whoever came up with this, a good map.
You need to thank Dorothy for that. She kept asking for a big map, so we finally gave it to her.
thank you, Dorothy. Okay, but why isn't the California Coastal Trail at least annotated?
Are we able to get that on the screen or not?
Yeah, I think we are. To clarify, if you look at the project list and you look in all the coastal areas, it's listed as a project. About a year ago, we hired a consultant to help us locate the coastal trail in San Luis Obispo County. And actually, I think it was more than a year ago. And our intent was that the consultant would conduct interviews, which she did, with different agencies that are involved, for example, state parks up in the North Coast. Also talk to people that live in the area so we could get a better idea where the coastal trail may be located as well. She did start that endeavor, and there's a little bit of sadness to the story. She then discovered she had a very serious illness. And as a result, the project was delayed. We do have a draft coastal trail document report that we are now making available to some of the other agencies such as Coastal Conservancy and such that have been involved in the implementation of the Coastal Trail. Some of those agencies will eventually help fund it as well. It has not been finished yet, and we're thinking now that
right, and I thought that's where the Templeton to Whale Rock Trail went along.
If you look at page 813 of the document, it talks about the Cypress Mountain Road to Cambria Trail, and it says along public roadways. And you'll notice that all the trails that were of that the Park and Rec Commission proposed for potential removal are indicated in yellow. And it says connects Cypress Mountain Road to Cambria via Santa Rosa Creek Road. And then you'll see C countywide map. PRC recommended for removal. So that is one of the ones recommended for removal.
Yep.
And that's this trail. Does it work if I point? It doesn't work if... This?
Yeah.
Does it...
Mouse.
It's a mouse. Put it down.
Make it be a mouse.
Put it down. We got all the high-tech stuff here. You don't get
they
that.
They didn't tell me I'd have like to this. Do this. Oh, so it's right there. It's this trail. It goes, and then it extends all the way. And so you're right. It does pick up to the Cayucas section as well. But we are recommending at this point that that entire trail be deleted. And just for clarification, it's a very rural area. When we sat down and talked about it, we did not foresee development occurring in that area in the near future. And if for some reason there was a general plan change in that area to residential use out of agriculture, then the policy addresses that and says if you're changing from agriculture to rural residential, then we can look at whether there should be a trail in that area. So we felt the compromise addressed the agricultural issue as well as that if growth did occur, we had another mechanism to potentially look at a trail. Mm-hmm.
But, Jan, if I could just respond, and I don't want to cut into Commissioner Rose's remaining questions, but while we're on that topic, I see a sort of circular argument or chicken and an egg problem with that analysis, and that is this. When we see projects before us now that are converting from agricultural uses to residential in areas where we don't have, you know, trail alignments or, you know, designations, what we're told by staff is that, well, it doesn't make sense to go for a trail easement here, or it doesn't make sense to go for a trail of construction here because it's a trail to nowhere. You've got agriculture on either side. And so, you know, ultimately, I think we need to acknowledge that this county is developing. It's going to continue to develop, and it's going to continue to develop in places where we're not currently envisioning development happening. It's just a sad, unfortunate reality that we're all trying to work effectively against, but we're losing, honestly. And so I'm uncomfortable. I mean, when we get to that section of the document, I want to talk about the trails that are being called for removal, but I'm uncomfortable relying on that kind of soft assurance that, well, if there's a general plan amendment down the road and there's a conversion of use down the road, we can revisit it then, because history has shown us when we do revisit it then, we are then told, well, it's not in the plan and it's a trail to nowhere, and ultimately I think it's a recipe for losing opportunities to have new trails.
I don't know if you want a somewhat of a response. I mean, that is the very issue we wrestled with as well. And as a result, when we decided to revise the language and talk about which trails we were willing to take off the table, we brought the trails people back. We brought the bicycle people and the equestrians and the hikers. And we said, our foremost intent, and being realistic of over what this element is, a 15 to 20 year plan, being realistic what we can do in the next 15 to 20 years, is what is our goal here? And all of us said is that we really want to connect the urban areas, and we really want to provide trails in the urban areas. And realistically, even if for some reason California Valley really started to grow in the next 5 years, is it possible that we could really connect California Valley to Atascadero? And, you know, we all kind of looked at each other and said, no, the priority would be something more like the Atascadero to Templeton connector. So looking realistically at where the money's going to be at, where the population's going to be at, and what our ability in terms of accomplishing miles of trails, we felt we were much better serving the urban areas, which realistically is kind of our intent here, and focusing on that rather than arguing about whether California Valley in the future might really develop and we're going to need that connection over, you know, miles and miles of highway. So it just, it's not that it wasn't worth the fight, it just seemed it wasn't one of the top priorities. And realistically, in hopefully in 10 years, we'll revise this document, and if the patterns have changed and new towns have been developed, hopefully we have looked at, well, how does this fit into our trail system, and do we get some trails here that we'll want to connect to over here, which are not so rural anymore.
You know, and I guess I would agree with you that some of the trails just really made no sense, and we just may disagree on which ones do and don't. But, you know,
Well, the goals are still with the relevant sections. So are you saying the one that lists all the goals and then all the policies? Because what it does is the one appendix in the back lists all the goals and policies as one document, and that's Appendix F.
Okay, well, that got so big I kind of lost it in there, I guess. All right, never mind. Okay, my last question, and this is for
That was easy to accomplish.
And this I'm asking the park commissioners. I don't want to hear staff's opinion on this one. And it's related to what, you know, Mr. Christie was getting at. Evidently, you heard some testimony, let's have lots of trails, and no, this one doesn't make any sense. How did you come to the conclusion that this one should be removed, and evidently Farm Bureau has some more that perhaps they might want to have removed? How did you get there? And I saw that you have them highlighted in yellow that you've recommended for deletion. How did you, could you talk a little bit about that process?
Negotiation.
Well, maybe we could say more about that. Mr. Matthews looks like he's got a...
it just seemed to take a case by case. As in the trail that was just under discussion there, the Santa Rosa Creek, there was a full room of people screaming at us about it. I think that we were called communists at one point. So ideological discussions and all got into it. You started looking at was just, is this such an important part of this that we really just need to back it up regardless of what all the property owners adjacent to it say? And there were some that I think we probably left in, and then there were some that were, like in the case of that one, it just it looked like a really difficult trail to build for, you know, as Mr. Brown mentioned, the cliff. I mean, you know, there are some really difficult spots along that creek road that just make it not too feasible. So that one I think could wait until such time that that, you know, as Jan mentioned, you know, maybe in 10 years things will shift it enough to where you can look at it again. So I think we took them on pretty much a case-by-case basis, and through several meetings, these things sort of, you know, came to where you saw these yellow highlighted trails for deletion.
Any others?
I'm done. I'll comment. I think one of the comments that we looked at is if and when the state of California decided to make it a four-way emergency evacuation road, that would be certainly the time to look at putting a trail access through there. And in the meantime, in places, as we've heard, it's just dangerous.
I'm done.
So would it be safe then, in summary, to say that the trails that are proposed for being removed, the primary criteria was the amount of public opposition to them, and then secondarily the feasibility or the potential recreational value? Would you say that was sort of the order of priority in the decision making?
Okay, next, Penny.
I have like three or four general comments. I think that our history shows that aside from, quote, county funding, we have had tremendous support from private and nonprofit organizations, and yet I see in all of our goals and objectives and policy statements that we don't really encourage, support, seek that type of funding. I'm not a real wordsmither, but I think that we need to clearly state that it isn't just dependent upon county government to fund, that we really encourage private and nonprofit organizations to assist in the funding of both acquisition and maintenance. The kind of other thing, and I think it goes more to more and a little bit into the background or a bit of information for someone who's going to pick this up and read it, but we have, and one came to mind to me, we mentioned private opportunities or private existing facilities, and maybe it's just not in here. There is a reference to homeowner association, private community, but we have, I don't know how many mobile home parks where they have community centers, they have recreational programs, they, I'm sure, even have, you know, other walking and hiking and whatever experiences right in their own, quote, private. But these all add to the opportunities that everyone in this county, and I guess it's just a little bit of background if we can sort of note those types of things, because I think they do have mechanisms, and in fact sometimes they start with funding other opportunities like nonprofits. The recent article on the Dana Adobe and its acquisition was done through nonprofit. Bruce and I are kind of familiar with a lot of these things. So I think we need to not only acknowledge, but we need to support that type of relationship and partnership.
Sarah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming that when this comes back to us, we're going to go through and do essentially a line item did in the North Coast Area Plan update. And so I have a lot of comments on the document that I'm going to reserve because I think it's more appropriate, you know, specific edits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to maybe mention a couple of broad things that I'm going to be wanting to discuss more when it comes back to us in subsequent hearings. And the first thing is picking up on Commissioner Rapa's earlier comments about the general observation about the funding constraints. And I know through my own history with county parks that funding has been continually inadequate for our parks department, and I'm glad to see some indication that that's beginning to turn around. But I think that that long grinding reality has sort of had a deleterious effect on maybe the constitutional attitude of park staff, you know, understandably and probably necessarily for survival purposes. And I really take issue with the concept, and I've had numerous cordial discussions with county staff, park staff about this in the past, but I really take fundamental issue with the concept that we shouldn't acquire parks until we can identify a funding mechanism to maintain them. And I'm going to tell you why I disagree with that statement. Unless we have the resource in hand, we will never be able to get the political support to get the money to maintain it. You know, as county departments jockey for budget allocations, they need to make their case to the supervisors. And it's a much stronger case to say, look, we have this 500-acre park. It's property. It's located adjacent to, you know, X number of residents. We need this much money to do these specific improvements for it. You can get the community behind you lobbying for it, and you get the funds. It's much more realistic to do it that way than to pass up an opportunity when it comes along because you haven't identified the funding mechanisms. You've said yourself, you know, once you've got the grant opportunities that this document provides, if you have a resource and you need the funds to develop or maintain it, you have a vehicle to look for grant funding from private enterprises, such as Commissioner Rappa mentioned, or public entities. So I'm really going to support having those kinds of philosophical statements removed from the element when it comes before us, because I think, as Director Jenny said, we need to be proactive and in our parks planning, and the funding limitation is self-imposed. So that's probably my overall comment. Secondarily, it was Nancy Graves that had mentioned the coastal trail, and I think I understood staff saying that, you know, that a separate planning process was going on, but we didn't want to hold this document back because of the difference in timelines. I'm hoping that we can find an opportunity to at least add some general policy language about the coastal trail in advance of that plan actually being finalized and adopted. Because, I think it was Pandora mentioned earlier, opportunities are being lost every day. And I'm going to give you an example just briefly. On Tuesday, the board had an item before it, a project on the Harmony Coast, west of Highway 1, adjacent to State Parks property, on China Harbor, which is extensively used by kayakers and surfers. The staff was making, in my opinion, a very reasonable, minimal request for an offer to dedicate lateral access along the beachfront 25 feet inward from the mean high tide line. I think we should be asking for a coastal trail alignment through that property because the Harmony Coast is a key link in the coastal trail, and it's almost all entirely privately owned. And so every time we have an opportunity before us through a discretionary use permit to get an alignment for the coastal trail, we should be taking it mapped across their property. How can we do a better job when we have projects, discretionary projects before us that do offer an opportunity for a trail alignment? How can we do a better job of taking advantage of those opportunities so that those trails do actually get designated, designed, built, and used? Ideas?
One came up in I believe, our last parks meeting, and I'm not sure there's a new idea, but it just made sense that if you just have a wide enough easement where it could be placed somewhere that works for the project to be developed, and you still can keep the trail as a part of it, like a mile wide.
Yeah. That ought to give
whatever,
you space.
Whatever it might happen to be.
I like your vision, Rick.
The biggest problem we've had, generally the trail corridors are sufficiently defined, and there's a sufficient idea of where on the ground the trail makes sense. Mm-hmm. where it's going to be put. And actually, Commissioner Matthews kind of hits on it. It's just having that corridor and keeping a placeholder. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have struggled with is the idea of when we actually build a trail. And one of the pieces of one of the tools that we're envisioning trying to get into the toolbox, once we have a plan adopted of where we're trying to go, is a methodology that's not unlike what Public Works uses when it comes to roads. Us being able to accept an offer of dedication, for example, with no expectation that that's creating a trail today, mm-hmm. because it's just one link in a chain. And until we get another couple of links and it goes from someplace to someplace, it won't be a trail. So we can accept it into the inventory, but it is not a trail at this point. It's simply securing an easement. One of the things that we have struggled with, and it kind of goes to the issue of accepting things, you know, because you don't have the money yet, which we'll have a lot of discussion about that, is the ability to not leave an option on the table. And we just, I think we have some ideas for a better mechanism as to how to do that. And it, again, it involves this model of accepting almost without prejudice that we are preventing us from being excluded in the future, but we are not yet opening a trail. And that kind of goes to simply even some operational issues. We really don't want people going out in the middle of no place because there's a couple hundred yards and it's a little trail that goes nowhere to nowhere. So we have struggled with how to do that, how to accomplish that. And I think we'll talk more about this later, but I think we have a mechanism that will be recommended ultimately to the board that will keep us from getting cut off from linking all those pieces. That makes some sense.
Pete, we had a project before us at our last meeting in San Miguel, and it was a new subdivision located in an area where the Salinas River Trail is going to go through. And all these very issues were discussed. And the funding issue came up. And I suggested that we condition the project to require the developer to post a bond for, you know, future construction of the trail. And staff's response was, well, we can't really estimate how much it's going to cost to construct the trail because we don't know when it's going to happen, and so we can't really come up with a figure for the developer to bond for. And my thoughts on that is, well, agreed, but something is better than nothing. And if we put the money in some kind of interest-bearing account or something, I mean, you guys are always having to struggle for funds. You can always put to good use anything that's available for you. And if you had even an inadequate amount of funding, it could be used for matching funds in a grant proposal down the road. So is that something that we can look at working on getting an opportunity to bond for some of these trail projects?
I'm not sure if bonding is a mechanism necessarily. It may be paying into a fund, a development mm-hmm. fund, so that the obligation is settled. Mm-hmm. The issue with bonds is, you know, when you're holding somebody's money, they're always right. back to you. You know, they want to release that bond. They need that capital mm-hmm. to do other things. A mitigation bank, a development bank, something along that type of a mechanism mm-hmm. may make more sense long term. So the developer can be done, finished. They know where they stand. And I think that gives them a more certainty to work with us and a greater willingness to work with us. But the argument that we don't know yet what those costs are is mm-hmm. absolutely accurate. Mm-hmm. We may wait yeah. 2 years. We may wait 20 years to put the links together. And obviously construction costs can vary widely right. during that time. So all we're going to do is kind of a best guess anyway. And quite honestly, from our standpoint, and I speak perhaps from my jaded perspective of being an Orange County refugee, getting the access, getting that easement is the most critical piece. It's not that funding isn't important, but we can find over time, we can find sources of the capital. In many cases, when we're talking about trails, we can even marshal volunteer services, and we have done that. And we can
that area. If this document is a vehicle to create that mechanism, I would really like staff to help us work with language to get that done, because I think it's critical. Granted, you could get it done without the funding, but I think you could get it done quicker with the funding.
Well, and just I'll defer this to the professional planners in the room, which I clearly am not. But the other issue that is often we wrestle with is proportionality. Is simply getting the easement sufficient? And of course, that's going to depend on the scope of the development. So, I mean, that's some of the things. For the benefit of those people who may not hear the rest of this discussion in the weeks to come, that's another thing we struggle with, is how much is it appropriate to ask that developer to do? And in many cases, it may only be appropriate to ask for that way through and not necessarily to build that trail or fund it in the future. That's an issue. Obviously, there's a case by case. In many cases, it would most certainly be proportional to ask for development.
But correct me if I'm wrong. If it's a standard in the general plan, if it's in this element that's adopted by the board as a standard that properties developing along these specified trail corridors have to provide an easement, then we get around the nexus issue because it's a requirement of the general plan. And then the nexus issue would apply to how much fee is imposed, perhaps. But isn't that a way to get around? I guess that's a Tim McNulty question.
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I think you switched there between the issue of nexus and the issue of proportionality. And I think what Mr. Jenny was referring to is the question of whether or not the requirement of an offer of dedication is proportional to the amount of impact that will be created by the development. The issue of nexus is a different one, and that is the kind of thing that you're asking for likely to solve the problem that's being created by the development that is being requested. I think the point that you are making or getting to is one that when property regulations like these are applied uniformly across the board to a particular set of applicants, as opposed to being imposed on a case-by-case basis, that they're given greater deference by the courts. It doesn't mean that those issues go away, but you're correct that the presumption that there's been some sort of bad acting on the part of the government in acquiring something goes away when the rule is uniformly applied to a particular set of people.
So can you give us a little bit of help and assistance here, Mr. McNulty, in terms of what would be the most effective use of this document for getting these key high-priority trails that we are keeping in the plan, for getting them actually getting the easements for them, getting the money to construct them, and getting them implemented? Would it be to have standards in the plan that apply to land use divisions along those corridors? Would it be bonding? Would it be a fund? How would you suggest that we proceed?
Well, I certainly think that standards in the plan, to the extent that they apply to particular corridors, would be useful and would be something that in reviewing individual development projects we would be able to use. With regard to bonding, I guess I'd need to know more about the facts. The issues that we have with bonding are generally that applicants can only get a bond for a particular period of time, and it's usually impossible to get one that lasts for a long period of time, and certainly impossible to get one that lasts for an indefinite period. So unless you have a real specific time frame, the bonding option doesn't work very well in lieu of obtaining an actual offer to dedicate.
So we could come up with a fee similar to the Kit Fox Mitigation Bank fee that we charge. You know, we could do it by, you know, linear length of trail created, or we could do it by, you know, number of subdivision units. We come up with some kind of criteria, but we could come up with a fee that's applied, equally to all applicants that goes into a bank that could be used for trail construction when we have enough segments. Is that a doable thing?
Well, the rules with regard to fees are very specific. As you probably know, the county currently collects a public facilities fee that includes within it a component that is designed to address the park and recreation impacts of particular development projects. On subdivisions, we also collect a Quimby fee. So to the extent that we're already collecting a fee that's designed to mitigate the impact that would be mitigated by your proposed fee, we would need to somehow reconcile those things.
Well, the fees that you're referring to are imposed across the board. The fees that I'm referring to would be imposed simply on those projects that are adjacent to these designated trail alignments. And because they're going to be receiving a greater benefit, as we've heard.
We would need to have a professional advise us that there was such an impact, that it could be quantified, that it could be distributed among a particular group of people, and there would be work that would be involved. We would be attempting to comply with the AB 1600 requirements of the government code.
In other words, you'd need to make solid legal findings to justify the fee.
That's right.
But I'm confident that our county council has the expertise to do that, or to, you know, contact their colleagues that do that.
We can certainly apply the law, but what I'm saying is we would need facts. we would need a record upon which to do it. And I don't know, because I haven't seen the document that we're talking about, I don't know if it would get to that level of detail that would allow us to actually implement a program like that. I guess what I'm saying is the mechanism is probably there. I just don't know if the facts are there or not.
Okay.
I have just one comment that I'd like to dovetail in on this discussion. Since you have to zero in on certain trails because of the affordability, there isn't enough money to do everything, is there some way to get the users notified of this, new people coming into the county with horses and they want to be, is there some way that we can say, hey, if you buy this property or you locate here, you'll be closer to facilities, closer to trails, closer to stables, that they'll know that rather than scatter all over the county and you try to accommodate them, that if they go in this community, that those facilities are there or will be there in the near future, and easier to accommodate them.
Well, off the top of my head, one solution would be to adopt an up-to-date recreation element.
Okay. but I didn't...
How do we go about that?
But I didn't really see that addressed in here. Notifying communities where that this could happen easier for the equine users.
I think with time what will happen is that there will eventually be, and some of the groups already put it out, whether it's a bicycle map or an equestrian map, but over time I think those trail maps will be, as we accomplish more, the trail maps will be published, and when you choose to locate in a community, you can choose that, gee, this community has lots of trails, this one doesn't, I'd rather be down here, sort of thing. And as well as looking at a park and rec element for where the new trails are proposed, and then weighing whether it's realistic that they'll be there in the next 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Not only trails, but stable facilities and things like that.
Aging areas and stuff.
Now, those would be added on in a 5 or 10 year period, or you'd do it on a yearly basis, or what?
You know, one of the things we've talked about too in terms of the maps, and we've kind of fooled around with different options, is that once we're sure of the element, because it's kind of expensive to produce the maps, and especially they work much better in color than they do in black and white. Once we have an element in place, we will put a map together that is I think nicer than what we have today, and maybe more specific, we're hoping as well. As time goes by, what we'd like to do is do a countywide map that shows where all the existing trails are, and we would update that, I hope, you know, every 2 years or maybe year.
Mm-hmm.
And we would work with the Trails Committee, you know,
mm-hmm.
to help set priorities as well as to help to define that map.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could, you know, there was a couple comments I would like to clarify. Maybe when you guys are done, I don't need to clarify them now.
Okay.
All right. Bruce?
Are you... thank you, Mr. Chairman. A handful of questions here. Echoing Commissioners Christie and Rappa on a couple points, specifically the acquisition with or without identified maintenance funds, and I wonder whether this element or whether your division's operating procedures might provide for a more formal, a possible formal relationship between a local nonprofit and your department to provide the maintenance that might otherwise be available. The thought, my own, you know, specific example, Norma Rose Park, Cayucas, scheduled for development, stalled a little bit waiting on maintenance funds, with the possibility, as yet unrealized, of local support for the maintenance. And do you see any avenue where some more formal policies or framework for getting the private partnership developed might lie?
Well, I've heard this topic has come up a couple of times this morning, and it's suggesting to me that we want to make sure that we have emphasized that in the document as sufficiently as we are emphasizing it in practice, because that's absolutely been our approach. And it's embodied in the mission statement that, with the help of the Park Commission, staff developed years ago, that our job is to ensure opportunities for recreation, not always to provide them. we have heard already from Commissioner Rappa the Dana Adobe acquisition. We are providing $1 million in county park funding to help acquire property at the Dana Adobe, and then working in partnership, we will then in turn be leasing that property back to the Friends of the Adobe to manage the site. But it hasn't kept us from trying to nibble around the edges, and certainly not kept us from looking a gift horse in the mouth. Those projects of opportunity, we've grabbed them, and we're going to figure it out when we can. As to, you know, maybe we need to be stronger about how we're saying that in these policy statements, but we certainly are looking for opportunities to partner with others. Norma Rose Park is a good example. We've been having discussions, as I think Commissioner Well knows, with the community to help us reduce what the maintenance load would be. Now, unless somebody's going to volunteer to pay the PG&E bill and, you know, pay some of the hard costs that are associated with this, we're still going to have some hard dollar costs, mm-hmm. and that's what's kind of
right.
held us up.
Right.
Is we, the county, have to put some money into this.
Right.
And to date, that'll be a board decision. Yeah. But we have been facilitating that discussion with the community to reduce that amount to make it an easier bite for the board to take.
Right.
So it's clearly a part of the way we've been trying to do business, and by having heard this from a couple commissioners, it's clear to me maybe we just haven't emphasized that enough in our policy. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And where I was headed with that was whether you might have some formal manner of evaluating the strength of a particular nonprofit who might step up and say, hey, look, we're ready to commit to X dollars or X Y list of tasks for the year, and then you would have some confidence that 5, 10, 20 years from now, that group would still be if it needed to be until you guys get flush with money and take it over.
And that's certainly a key issue that we think about, because a commitment of opening a new park facility, it's like having kids. It's open-ended.
Right.
So we have had to make sure that if we have a
group
and say we'll help, that is going to be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if we waited to have kids till we had the money to support them, we wouldn't have a population problem.
All right, bringing it back to the commission here, and I just you've touched on another one of my observations is that as you were saying in terms of increasing your inventory, you find yourself, it seems to me, in the tension between trying to do good planning and trying to take opportunities as they come up. Land conservation organizations have that struggle all the time, and so it's my observation that this plan is flexible in that mode, because you really can't be very specific in what you are going to do. I mean, the Norma Rose Park, again, is an example, little slice of a piece of state park that was finally identified, came out of nowhere, really, wasn't really on your radar, I think, until that was identified. Let me concentrate on the recreation side of the PRE. You'd made reference to the fact that the county itself doesn't really have a lot of recreation programs in place, and yet my observation, and as I say, your quite eloquent statement as to the value of parks is a lot in the recreation programs that occur in the parks, especially in terms of youth programs and its effect into the wider law enforcement and social social welfare issues. And so I wonder if you could comment just briefly on where you think the county's recreation level of recreation programs are. I know it's relatively low, and what you see the future of that, where you see the future of that heading.
Well, it is relatively low because historically we have been considered a facilities provider. The problem with that, with nearly half of our population of our county living in the unincorporated areas, unless you're very close to a city and city recreation programs, you don't share the same benefits as everybody else. And yes, there are benefits of not living in town, but, you know, having a chance for kids to sign up for Little League shouldn't be one of those that you give up on. Because of that underlying philosophy, we have tried to make inroads. We have tried to begin to grow a rudimentary program. We've built it initially around opportunities that exist. We operate 6 swimming pools. So we have extended beyond just recreational swimming to offering swim lessons and offering aqua aerobics. We've even facilitated some swim teams and competition from one community to the other. We've recently gotten our feet wet in terms of actually providing recreation classes. I don't have people on my payroll doing that, but again, under the philosophy of partnering with others, we have been facilitating contract classes. So you can now go to county facilities and take a yoga class. You can go to a dog obedience class, you can take a clogging class, those sorts of things. I think, frankly, we need to find ways to do more and more of that. And I'm very impressed with the enthusiasm of Commissioner Rapa that our limitations are self-imposed. I agree with that philosophy. We need to keep in mind, though, that the self is the greater self.
Exactly.
60,000.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And getting consensus that we need to commit more to this, quite frankly, I think is largely an educational process. As Commissioner Nash Conner so eloquently put this, parks are far more than places for kids to play. I've been in this business for about 34 years, and I must say I started out thinking about parks as a place for people to go and play and to protect sensitive habitats. It takes some knowledge and some thinking and some time to mature that thinking about all of the economic and social and policies that talk about encouraging that. We probably the best example where we are working closely with the city is here in San Luis Obispo, and it's covered everything from the joint operation of Bishop Peak. We manage the top of it. In fact, we don't even own it. We have a relationship with State Parks, who owns it. We manage the top. The city manages the bottom. So cooperatively, we manage a trail system in open space area. We have made our ball fields at El Chorro Regional Park, just outside the city, available to the city, who are in the process now of lighting them to provide for league recreation to play. We're doing those sorts of cooperative things, working with school districts. We have had programs working with a couple of school districts, most notably Lucia Mar in South County, of providing funding for park-like recreational improvements. Soccer fields at Napomo High School that are de facto parks, so the schools can spend their money indoors on education. So those partnerships are definitely a part of our plan. Okay. Specific recreation programming, we haven't been doing that sort of thing yet. It's been more facility-based.
Okay. And then my final question, this button may be a little bit on the warm side and may require a longer discussion, but looking at your Chapter 5 decision tree briefly, it seems a well-reasoned approach to considering a specific project. Can you speak briefly about the decision tree for deciding geographically where your resources are going to be spent, something that comes up frequently from one community to the next, that are we getting our fair share? And, again, planning versus opportunity might be part of this.
Briefly? No. Probably not. That's always my challenge. You raise a key issue. We hear it time and time again, and it's keeping balance. And that's one of the issues that we talked about. It's one of the overriding issues when we walked into this program was to make this whole element have some objectivity and some balance to it. The classic is the coast. There seems to be always more money available from various granting sources to do things along the coast. Hard to find money to fund playgrounds in the inland areas. So what we've tried to do is take a balanced approach with our numerous sources. Well, I shouldn't say numerous. That implies that we've got more than we... with our various sources of capital, local development fees, Quimby fees, and public facility fees that Mr. McNulty mentioned, the grant sources. And take them in and put them into one pot and then redivvy them out. And that means that maybe it means borrowing a little bit from here to put it over there to distribute the wealth, if you will, a little more evenly. We might not be as inclined to use public facility fees on the coast if we can find coastal resources grants there, as an example. That is the continuing struggle that we deal with. It's not only how do we equitably spread the wealth, but we're also faced with the challenge that right now not everybody's at the same page. We have some communities, Los Osos for one, has a park acre per thousand ratio of about under a half an acre per thousand residents. Well, the national standard is to be at about 5 or 6 acres per thousand for community parks. That's roughly equivalent to downtown Los Angeles, at less than half an acre. And we have other communities where it's more than 10 or 12 because they're relatively small communities with a relatively large park. In some places, we have lots of parkland, such as Napomo. We have a large park, but it's all in one place, and it's not necessarily where the new growth is coming.
Yeah.
So we're trying to find that way to balance availability and at the same time bring everybody up to somewhat the same standard, not take everybody up 2 points, but see that we can rise the tide equally. And that's been a challenge for a long time.
Thanks.
Thanks, sir.
Pandora, I believe you were trying to get in on some discussion here.
Thank you. Both Commissioners Rapa and Christy brought up a couple questions, and I
separate points, and I just wanted to respond. One of you asked, how could we do a better job? And one of the things that this document will do is it will solidify its credibility in the sense that communication mechanisms can then be devised between the various departments, whether it's parks and planning or parks planning and public works. In the past, we have lost opportunities when things have just fallen through the cracks because public works wouldn't have known or planning didn't know or we didn't know that they were planning to do something. This document will help us get through that process a lot better. One of the things that I wanted to mention about projects of opportunity, I think it was one of Dorothy Jennings' first meetings when the principal of the new Napomo High School, which hadn't even opened yet, came to us and said, this is a concept. We've just had this idea. We have land for a soccer field. We have no money. We had Quimby fees. We had to spend or we would lose them. It was a perfect opportunity to say, here's the land. We have the money. We can marry them. And the best news of that is, of course, Napomo High School continues to maintain them. We have that mindset not only with the school districts and with the cities and various districts around the county, but being able to swing. And we need our decision makers to understand that the decisions they're making, like they made on Tuesday, will impact this county for generations. Mm-hmm. And right. This will help.
You know, Pandora, I'd like to follow up on that because as you were talking, it occurred to me that I don't really have a clear idea of what you folks do, other than I've been to a couple of the meetings relative to the update of this plan. But beyond that, for instance, it occurred to me, do you ever see our agendas, or does staff ever bring you specific projects? I mean, it would be great. I mean, we obviously get input from staff on a project-by-project basis relative to the needs of parks, but, you know, personally, myself, I don't always agree with what the staff recommendation is, and sometimes other commissioners don't as well. I'm wondering if it would be advisable to look at the possibility of finding a way for our two commissions to not necessarily have joint sessions all the time, but to have a more interactive dialogue about parks-related issues as they come to us for regulatory action. It'd be great to hear from the chair of the Parks Commission on some of these projects, or it would be great to get a comment letter on a project that the commission has, you know, considered. And I don't know if you do that or if it's, and I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Paul, you want to?
I think it would be great. I think the biggest thing that we see now is when we get a potential red flag, and it, this is, you know, the last ditch effort, we need to do something about it. But if we were notified on a regular basis and were kept up with it, if I wasn't here, I would be sure that one of my commissioners was here to address it.
Because quite frequently, what will happen, here's the dynamic, you probably don't have a super great idea of what we do either. Let me give you a scenario that happens quite frequently. We'll get a project before us, and a commissioner will make a suggestion that maybe we should condition the project to do thus and such relative to a trail or a park or an open space easement or something like that. And then the blowback that we get from that is, well, you know, we're changing this project at the last minute. Staff's been working on this for a year and a half and nobody's brought this up. The applicant has these expectations that the project is going to look like this and we shouldn't change it like that. And yet the public hearing is the first opportunity that we have had to weigh in on all aspects of the project. And so maybe if staff was working with you folks earlier in the planning process, similar to the way they do with advisory councils, and you could have an opportunity to provide input at the planning stage, because like I say, we don't get it until there's a staff recommendation before us. Maybe you could provide some assistance in staff in pushing the envelope a little bit in terms of the kinds of recommendations that ultimately get brought forward to us. Just a thought.
Well, I believe the parks are notified whenever they are next to a trailer or something like that. Am I Am I wrong in that, or?
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, what happens is when a planning proposal comes in, the planning department sends us over a referral. Mm-hmm. I would say park staff is implementer for what the Parks Commission has already adopted. So in some cases, for example, if it's a trail in the North County near the Templeton area, I will even call Dorothy and say, what do you think about this area? You know, I know you're concerned about Toad Creek. What do you think about where the trail should be located? But we don't take every referral to the Parks Commission. It would just not be practical. I mean, there's just no way to do that. And we usually condition the project early on, and again, for consistency with the trails plan, which they recommended to the Board of Supervisors, be adopted.
But I think it wouldn't be too much to ask that at least our agendas went, because in all honesty, we do get these things at the last minute. It makes it extremely difficult for myself. I won't speak for others. And I would think that even a simple referral of our agenda to the Park and Rec Commission, which I think the agendas come out 2 weeks before, 3 weeks, whatever it is, and then it becomes incumbent upon the commissioners themselves to look at that. I'm very careful how I say this.
Watch yourself. You're on tape here.
I mean, I would look with equal weight upon the comments from the Park and Rec Commission as I do from the advisory councils.
But I think what Commissioner Christie was getting at is getting in there a little bit earlier. By the time the agenda's out, the staff report's out, and we got a plan and we're going with it, train is rolling, get out of the way. Yeah. But where we often see this, especially in Napomo with planned developments, they're trying to squeeze in more housing into the area. That's smart growth. That's good. But then you get these small lots, and so they have to have a public space. Well, the public space ends up being a parking lot, and you don't get much recreational there. So sometimes we look at that and see, gee whiz, that, you know, where are they going to, is this barbecue that they're putting in, is this adequate enough? And that's really a park and recreational kind of mindset that we're tasked with coming up with, and sometimes we don't agree. In many cases, it's because, yeah, it is at the last minute, you know, and now we want you to redesign your flood basin to put in a soccer field there or something, or they weren't planning on that, and the project's not going to pencil out. But maybe if that consideration was thought of early in the game, not everyone, but especially these planned developments where you're supposed to have a community space, they seem to be where we have more problems than in ordinary subvisions.
Yeah, the Pete, way I... Oh, excuse me.
Pete, I think, wants to
thank
get in on.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think what we're talking about is an issue of threshold. As Jan said, it would be impractical. It would bog the system down if we took every referral through the Parks Commission. But they certainly have heard issues, often area plans. I know Commissioner Christie has been when the Santa Margarita Ranch area plan came to the Park Commission. I think there's a perfectly appropriate point and maybe an appropriate subject for perhaps one more study session in the not-too-distant future about talking through where those thresholds might be, mm-hmm. at what point it would make sense for you all to refer issues to the Parks Commission for their recommendation as a body. I have heard over the last 16 years complaints from numerous commissioners, I won't address how well-founded they are, concerns that the board doesn't always turn to them and ask what's their opinion on a given issue. This is certainly an opportunity to rectify that and get some more input early on. I think some thought needs to go into where that threshold is.
Yeah, the way I'm sort of envisioning it is the Planning Commission is the body that provides a lot of focused attention and expertise on land use planning issues. Sometimes our actions are final, but oftentimes they're, acted upon also by the board. But as we're making those decisions, we're reviewing comments by CDF, who frequently comes to the hearing and provides comments. We're, again, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, who occasionally comes to the meeting to provide comments. And I think getting the Parks Commission in that feedback loop early, I totally agree with, Jan, that it's infeasible for them to comment on every single issue. But you know, similar to the way it works at advisory councils, at least the advisory councils that I've been familiar with, staff provides the advisory council with a list of projects that are sort of in the hopper that have been accepted for application, and the commission then could say, well, these are the only two we're really interested in looking at, and you know, and take it from there. And we could, I mean, I think our actions would be immeasurably enhanced by the focused participation and recommendations of the board's commission, who has, like, we have been appointed to do our job, they've been appointed for their expertise specifically in the areas of recreation and parks, which is so much of what we do. I would really encourage us all to put some effort into finding a way to make that happen in a functional way.
Yeah, and, you know, we see Jan at a lot of our meetings, and I agree. We could encourage that to be even more and involve the commission as much as you can in some of these decisions that affect recreation. So we look forward to that working together. I'd like to keep on going down. Dorothy, you... Pandora, is that...
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, okay. Dorothy, any more you want to add? Okay, Terry?
I'll scoot over and use this mic. Thank you very much. I haven't spoken today, but I do want to, again, commend the staff and the consultant for the work they've done. Some of you may know I have an extensive background in Parks and Rec as well, and have been through these study sessions on many, many times. And this report is an excellent one. I think I would call out, and I want to comment a couple things on the coordination between the two commissions in a minute, but I wanted to also comment quickly that really the vision section that's right in the beginning of this, I think it's Chapter 1, really talks about the outcome we're trying to achieve by adopting this document. It's really that the opportunity to really now align ourselves with the best parks and recreation projects in front of us, that we have opportunities to really tackle those. And it's a vision that's 10, 20 years down the road. This is going to give us the opportunity to do that. So I think we look at that as an opportunity to really start aligning the projects to what the needs are throughout the community. As response to the budget issue, I just want to go back to that just briefly. I think that's probably especially the maintenance issue budget is probably the most critical issue. It's not going to be necessarily answered by the adoption of this, but rather by some long discussions and some policy decisions made by others, certainly the community, but also the board as well. That's something we have to stay with, because I think the policy right now, if I'm Pete, correct me, as you said, that the board policies don't build it if we can't maintain it. And I think that Commissioner Christie is also speaking of the fact that that's not, I don't think, good business. It's not good practice, and we need to move beyond that. Hopefully the adoption of this PRE will let us get past that and start working on some other alternative means for maintenance or more funding wherever we can find it. As far as a commission coordination, I think that's just something we need to work on. I think staff can be of a lot of assistance by and have been identifying those projects which are relevant to Parks and Rec Commission. And I'm from the liberal approach of saying there's probably more than not less, so I'd like to see more of them when it's appropriate for our input. I think if the board's appointed us as Parks and Rec Commissioners to advise them in all matters of Parks and Rec issues in this county, then we ought to see them as best we can. That puts a little more, I think, stress on staff, but whatever they can do to help us, I'd appreciate it. But I think this adoption, this document, and the response that's now going on with the grand jury report is going to give this county a real opportunity to set its goals and vision for the next 20 years and what it wants to be like in a sense of its parks and recreation system and program. To serve, I think, a growing and changing community. So I think that, again, the job that you've done is exceptional, and it's going to give us, I think, give us all a lot of good direction and more work to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Next,
Rick.
Paul.
No, this is Rick Matthews from the 5th District. And I guess just this is some wrapping up of some of our observations and thoughts on this. And I think this is a great document that's maybe just needing a little bit of tweaking. One of the things that I say a little bit, like minute wordsmithing, that I know we have some true experts already, you know, working on this, and it kind of continues probably until the last day. The vision that we have, I just want to make sure that the tone of the document is visionary, and it is proactive and positive and optimistic. And I think that the funding issues that we're all so sensitive to and have been for so long, as you know, the realistic funding for the Parks Department seems to actually be declining over time, at least relative to the general fund and whatnot. We seem to be losing ground rather than gaining ground. I know we're making some changes in that. This needs to continue, and whatever it takes. We have a task force working on a lot of these issues right now that's been appointed by the Board of Supervisors regarding the grand jury report, and I think this is just going to lead to some good information that hopefully we can take forward and make whatever changes to really create a sustainable department. And so that's what I'd like to really just emphasize, is the proactive nature and not have to just control our vision to the point of being just reactive to the current dire, you know, funding situation. I've heard of parks being referred to as non-essential services, and I've heard this by some people that are in a position to control these services, and I just want to say that I don't agree with that. I think that these things are essential. I think some of the things that Pandora said so eloquently earlier just point out to just how important it is to a community. We can do better, and this needs to be a part of it. And you know, just the issues around tourism, the health of the populace here, property values, all the benefits that a parks and recreation system help to enhance. It's not non-essential. Another thing I want to say about this is the concessions that were made to these trail projects, I thought was a very good faith and a well-balanced and well-reasoned way to try to reach as much consensus as can happen on some of this stuff. There's property rights, you know, issues, obviously. I think we've dealt with those in a way without sacrificing what our main concern is, and that is to promote a proper park system for the parks and recreation system for the county. One thing that came in a recent letter to staff that Jan passed on to us this last week came from the Chumash people, and I just didn't want to get I know Mr. Greening mentioned something about some of these things, but it was the terms such as cultural places. I'm one of these people that thinks it's all in how things are interpreted by the people involved with it, and I think it's the very least you can do to accommodate people's preferred terminology. And so I would just encourage that we do that, and all areas referring to SB 18 I think also need to be addressed with regard to their comments. One other thing is there's a natural areas plan that we have that's been incorporated into this element. There's also a movement for an inventory of biological resources that I don't know what position it's in at the county right now, but I know that this is something that could be very helpful because there are other sustainability issues that don't just revolve around parks and recreation itself, but I think that this is going to be an important component to have as part of the overall information base, not necessarily a part of the parks and rec element, but I know that it will, if you find out that you have too many, old trees in an area and no regeneration of native oak trees in some of these natural areas, well, that's something that needs to be addressed. And I know that as part of the natural areas plan, at least, these are bits of information that will be real helpful. So I guess that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Paul?
I would again like to thank the staff for the job they've done in this report. I'd like to thank the Planning Commission for their comments, and I know that they won't go unnoticed, especially Commissioner Christie on her comments about parks and the need for funding, and Commissioner Rapp also. The thing that I would like to add is, as we grow older, we not only look at parks for ourselves, but for the future generations. And being a recent grandfather, I'm looking at it for my grandkids. And yes, it may not be a place for Johnny and Susie, but it's going to be a place for Grandpa and Susie. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I did mention that if something new came up that would allow the public to come in. Eric Greening wants to talk about SLOCOG for land acquisition.
And I think Dorothy was going to...
Oh, I'm sorry. Dorothy did... Well, okay. All right. We'll let Eric go and then...
I'm Eric Greening, and I welcome the discussion about partnering, and I think we're getting some real constructive... Certainly, when people are on parallel tracks, the more they can communicate and pass information back and forth, and in a timely way, the better. So to the extent that your commission can be engaged on review of at least appropriate levels or what mitigations would be most useful from the picture you see in terms of projects, at least major projects and area plan updates and that sort of thing that these folks are looking at, I think that cross-fertilization needs to happen. I was glad to hear Commissioner Matthews follow up on my SB 18 question. Being a general plan update, the consultations with the tribes are triggered, and certainly their cultural places and sensitivity toward their cultural resources and the meaning they have in their cultures is a critical part of this plan and a critical part of all of our understanding of the history of this land. I did want to mention another group that should be part of the dialogue and often hasn't been, and that's the Council of Governments. I serve on the Citizens Transportation Advisory Committee, which advises the Council of Governments Board. They're the primary transportation planning and funding entity, and some of the funding sources they handle, such as transportation enhancement grants, environmental enhancement and mitigation projects, etc., often consist of such things as trails, boardwalks, walkways, bikeways, and also land acquisitions. For example, the Elfin Forest, a good chunk of the money that got the Elfin Forest came through SLOCOG, through the transportation-related sources. Stadium Park in Atascadero, a good chunk of that came through. So, again, we have not been in dialogue with either of your commissions, and if there's a way to sort of institutionalize another set of cross-referral and cross-fertilization, often grants are being applied for, and I know the SLOCOG staff consults existing plans and is aware of existing priorities, but sometimes opportunities come up that don't have a particular home in anyone else's plan, and it would be good if we would talk about, well, where can this fit? Is there a way we can advance a goal? Is there a way we can hook this into the plan? The way, for example, in Atascadero, we're hooking in an effort of the Resource Conservation District along Atascadero Creek into the larger pattern of the Juan Bautista de Anza Trail, even though it's not part of that trail. There is a nexus. There's now a connection. There will be a continuous riparian corridor to connect with the Salinas River. Anyway, another whole area to look at coordination. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Dorothy, did you have something to add?
I wanted to comment in as we're closing today's session, how productive I believe our joint meeting has been. Many ideas exchanged, thought-provoking, provocative, and I'm look forward to our hearings.
All right.
Thank you.
Yes, so are we. And John, did you have something you want to add?
I think there was one more public speaker trying to get
out. All right.
Maybe just before Mr. Oliveira goes, just a comment. And
we have someone who wanted to speak from the audience,
okay.
I think.
Oh, from the... I'm sorry, I didn't...
Got to get them white slips up here.
Right there, that's great.
I'm sorry, I didn't recognize that. I'm sorry. Jolene. I'll let you pronounce it.
Okay, Jonali Estenis, and just thank you for all the effort. I mean, years and years and years have gone into this package, and I thank you for all the work you've put into it. I just had a couple of comments while we're here. Okay, as Sarah Christie spoke, setting goals without backing them with an ordinance gives no assurance that anything will get done. Atascadero had a creek protection plan that was scheduled to become an ordinance in 2005. This has been intentionally sunset. This is contrary to the goals of what this planning meeting is all about. To identify the natural corridors that connects the wilds and the parklands must be identified. The only way the connecting systems will be done will be sections at a time as land and money becomes available. So you have to consider the little pieces. So thank you for all of you that thought that was a good idea. The corridors allow the natural movement of animals, not just on the roadway. So when we talk about trails, it has to be corridors. I also have a comment regarding the planting. Wherever possible, recommend natives. There's quite a long list, and I didn't finish reading this whole report because I got stuck in the detail where they were planning to put a bunch of eucalyptus right down at the beach, and that's a non-native, so just in general, that might be throughout your package, and I wasn't sure if that was being considered. Get the resource in hand. That was a great comment. In my area, parkland was offered as a gift, but it was refused because they didn't want to accept the liability for the property. They wanted the giver to assume the liability. So the gift was withdrawn. And that property is zoned recreational and still for sale. It would connect county land with city land. It is right on the border. Okay. Sorry. This is... an idea. Language should come up when the property is for sale, that the easements there's a transfer, it should show up on the title that the government or bodies are notified that there is a potential to buy that easement or protect that easement. I don't know if that's how you think about that. Getting the easement is the most critical piece, that was said. Thank you very much. This is a good
You're getting short.
I'm almost done. This is really quick. This was something that was said, I think, Mr. Eugene Milchow. The part about the horsemen's group. In Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, on their website and in the brochures that they provide to the world at large, is a whole page stating that we're in the center of horse country. But I live in that community, and there are no connective trails anywhere in that community. I joined several horse groups in order to find the trails, and so far the recommended one is 1.5-mile trail, if not using the Salinas corridor. Okay, and I'll speed it up. Recreation multi-use trails. I know it's not the best to have hikers, bikers, and horses sharing the same path, but you have to be tolerant of each other as the places get tighter and tighter. So within our own groups, we can teach appropriate trail etiquette on how to deal with others. Because to say, I don't want one group or I don't want, you're going to have to learn to work together. So please don't exclude people if you can avoid that. Parks are not only places for kids to play.
All right.
Okay. But connectivity.
We have additional meetings scheduled, too.
Okay, that's it. I'm at the end. Thank you very much. I hope that helped in some way.
Please come back July 13th.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I know we're wrapping things up, but I have a very quick question for the last speaker. And you had mentioned a piece of property that had been offered and rejected due to liability concerns. Just very quickly, what is the name of that property and where is it located?
It's called Chandler Parkland, and I have a map. It's 100 acres.
And that is where?
It is at the Three Bridges area,
which is
more Highway 41 west at the Three Bridges area.
Thank you.
West of Tascadero, Highway 41, Chandler Parkland.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I just have a very quick question for staff, and just because it's on everybody's minds now. My understanding is that there are provisions in the government code that limit liability for public agencies that make land available for recreation. So is staff familiar with this property that was being discussed and what the thought process was?
I'm wondering if it was offered to the city of Morro Bay or city of Itasca.
City of Itasca. Oh, so it was not a county issue. Okay, thank you for that clarification.
And Mr. Chair, before you conclude, I think staff has comments as well.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Really briefly, Jeff.
Let's finish the public first. Okay. Well, let's stay for
I think we are. I don't see anyone else.
Oh.
Well, I guess we got to.
You guys got to put your white slips in. You know, he said it at the beginning. You know?
All right. Are there any more? Please get these in so we know where we are.
Hi, I'm sorry. I'm Kathy Hustis. I'm actually going to be speaking to you from the Trails Advisory Committee. And there was a question, where did the trails come from? The history of the trails, with the proposal was a researched and recognized historical stagecoach routes throughout the county. Many of the counties and communities in the United States, actually, are using their historical uniqueness to generate capital through tourism. Many of the communities and areas where the national trails pass through have seen significant increase in their revenues due to tourists bringing their money to us, actually. Each of those routes also has at least one ag-related business located on it. There's Lynn's on Santa Rosa, there are farm stays, and there are organic farms located on every one of those routes. So that was part of the significance of choosing those stagecoach routes. And, of course, then not only do you have walking trails, we have a very, very limited view of what a trail is in our community. They can function as, the more current view is that they function as an extension of your park system, because individuals, families along the trail system use it for recreation. And, of course, most of that, we've got 200 square miles of North County, which is the future Santa Maria, San Luis Obispo County, by the way, that doesn't have any park or that sort of facilities, and most of those trails were stagecoach routes were through that area. And you can have automobile trails that follow your stagecoach routes too, and people then come back into the more urban areas and spend money. So that's where those came from.
All right, thank you. Anyone else from the public? If not, I'll bring it back to the commission. Staff, you had...
Really briefly, Jeff Oliveira with the Environmental Division staff. I wanted to address a couple of the questions that came up about SB 18, in particular how it applies to the Parks and Rec element update. And it came up a couple times. Actually, the initiation of this Parks and Rec element update predates the founding of SB 18, although we did, implement the requirements of SB 18 for this project, and we sent out the way the process works is we sent a letter describing, this element update to the state Native American Heritage Commission. In turn, they sent us back a list of recognized tribal representatives that would likely be affected by the proposed element update. And we, in turn, sent letters to each of those tribal representatives and, inviting them to consult and to comment on this particular project. The comment that we received from the Northern Chumash Tribal Council did not fall out of the SB 18 process that we initiated. That particular tribal council at the time wasn't recognized by the state as as an official representative. Since then, they have become recognized representatives and sent this comment letter. That was the only comment that we received. However, the 90-day period that we have required to set aside for those comments has not expired yet. But this that comment from the Chumash tribe was the only one we've received so far, and it pretty much mentioned only that the word, you know, language revisions as far as using the specific phrases relating to cultural resources. So that and that was it. So yes, the SBA team process was initiated for this.
All right. Thank you.
Just a couple more quick comments, if you will. This is a recommendation, Chris Clark again, for your review. There were several comments, Commissioner Matthews, especially about the tone of the document and direction, and that's going to be very important in our discussions as we move through. I put all of the, as I mentioned before, all of the policies and objectives back in an appendix, Appendix F, and I put it deliberately at the very end of the document so it was real easy to get to. As you review this, I recommend that one of your reads is to just read through those policies absent the other language discussion in there, because that's where the Parks Commission really spent their time in deliberation, because they know that those policies are the ones that are going to guide land use decisions in the future, and that's where the emphasis was. So I make that recommendation. Thank you.
Gene, I'm sorry. And then I think that's it. I don't know that Cami has any comments. But I just wanted, there was a couple things that were raised, and I just want to clarify. I want to clarify that the Coastal Trail is not on our maps. However, it is in the project list. And, for example, in Oceano, it's on page A28. On Avila Beach, it's on A27. And I go down the list. But in each coastal community, there is a description for the Coastal Trail. That is our mechanism to condition projects. It doesn't need to be in both places. It is enough that it's in that list. Second of all, there was a question, I think, by Commissioner Christie to the commission. What was your criteria for determining which trails came off? And I think it was a little bit more complicated than what was most controversial. And I would say that was not the key, what was the most controversial. I think the key was the first place we started from was whether it was a new trail or whether it had existed in the 1991 plan. And pretty much our first cut was that we were not touching anything that was in the 1991 trails plan. We were only looking at those new trails that were proposed. And then we went through a list of criteria. Was it a community connector in an urban area? Would it primarily serve an urban area? Was it realistic in the next 10 years that this area would even develop? So my fear is next week a bunch of people will come back and say, you know, we're going to make this trail controversial so it will go away. That wasn't the basis. It was much more complicated than that. And for example, there was some move afoot to remove the Salinas River Trail and the Royal Grande Creek Trail. Both of them are in the 1991 Trails Plan. As far as our commission was concerned, those were untouchable. I just want to clarify that.
All right.
Just to clarify on that, Jan, the trails that, for instance, that California Valley Trail that wasn't in the 91 plan, then what plan was it in? I mean, where did it come from?
It came out of our workshops. And, in fact, in that case, it was, you know, when we went to the different workshops, if one person stood up and said, shoot, I think you should connect to Tascadero and California Valley, we said, well, shoot, why not? You know, maybe that's not such a bad idea. Well, we found out later possibly why it was. So, you know, if it seemed fairly reasonable, we thought, well, shoot, we'll put it on. It's on a street. You know, it's on a roadway. What difference would it make? Well, it made a difference. Some of the people, you know, since it basically was suggested by maybe one to two people, there was a whole crowd out there that said, hey, this is all ag land. This is very rural. It's not going to develop in the next 10 to 15 years. Leave us alone. And the more we thought about it, there was some logic to that argument.
So these were the workshops. These trail ideas came out of the workshops that were held in conjunction with which part of the process, with that were held in the last few years over this document, or that were held prior to the 96 update effort?
They were as a result of the workshop starting in 2003, but they were also meeting with individuals. You could call me and say, you know, Jan, I have some great ideas for projects. Mm-hmm. I would sit down with you, and like I said, if it seemed fairly realistic and you told me there was a good constituency that thought this was a good idea, in many cases, we were more than willing to consider it and put it into the project list.
Okay. One underlying issue with the projects, it wasn't quite what's your Christmas list? You know, just everything just threw at it went in there. But we also recognize that there would be projects that we would never likely be able to realize in the foreseeable life of this plan. But we wanted to keep the scope open to the extent that was feasible. One of the things that we proceeded every meeting, every community meeting with, was the explanation that this is, we start with, in a sense, the wish list. It should be just beyond our reach, but the stuff that we want to do. The next step after this recommend element's adopted is to begin to prioritize which are the most important. And then the third step, how are we going to pay for them? We didn't want to let money drive what went into this initial list, or even really what the priorities were yet, because we didn't want, it was like brainstorming. But as Jan points out, there were some, once we started to look at those lists, there were some things that came out that clearly weren't feasible. So at some point, we needed to start to call those. And it was a somewhat complex process.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, I know that the coastal trail is mentioned in various places throughout the document, but I think the representative from Coastwalk made a good point that, you know, people sort of look to the maps, and she felt that the coastal trail was getting a short shrift by not being included in the map that had other trails, such as the De Anza Trail and the Salinas Trail. Is there any way that we can amend the map to just provide a general non-alignment specific indication about the coastal trail through the county?
Well, when we talk about the projects, I think we can talk about this more. But your simple answer is yes.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Okay, this has been great. And we continue this on July 13th. And I want to get some direction here from staff and the commission. When we advertise this for the 13th, are you going to advertise the whole project, or are you going to tell the public, hey, we're going to look at this portion of it? I need to get some input on that.
Well, our recommendation would be, in your review of the element, is to kind of begin at the beginning and work your way through chapter 1, 2, 3 in that fashion. The one thing that we learned is what most attracts public attention are the projects.
Mm-hmm.
And our suggestion would be to begin that sequential review of basically the policy issues, the body of the document, making it clear that before you deal with the project list, we'll make sure that's an announced date certain, so those people who really want to come and talk will know when to come. And
all right,
don't have to worry about, ooh, are they going to go fast or slow in the meantime. Yeah.
So that's the way you'll advertise it. Does that commission agree with that?
I think it's helpful for us to know that on July 13th, yeah, we'll be discussing chapters 1 through,
yeah,
whatever, so
whatever.
We don't spend time reading stuff that we're not going to be talking,
right,
about.
Well, this one, I mean, doesn't it's not like our updates where it has chapters,
right,
of 400 pages, but I would agree. But, I mean, I would like to see I wouldn't like to see it limited to just chapter 1,
no,
2, and 3. I would prefer that it be the entirety, the document itself. And I guess I'd have two other requests. I have learned more about, quote, grand jury reports in the last 2 days than I knew about. From listening to Mr. Jennings and then reading the document, I come away with two different things going on. I would appreciate, in plenty of time to read, a staff report that gives a little bit of background. I didn't know that the board had made a decision or a mandate or whatever it was they did. I wasn't aware of a task force until I met with my counterpart, Terry. I would really appreciate knowing this ahead of time so I can take it all into context as I review the report.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Just to have an opposing viewpoint, I like Mr. Jennings' idea that we not advertise the project list until the day we are going to hit the project list.
Yes, I agree with that, yes. But if someone comes here with a general comment that cannot be at a later meeting, we'll take general comments too. I mean, but we'd like to zero in on a certain portion of it, and you'll spread that over two or three meetings, whatever you think is going to be required. And
reality is the projects are always what people want to talk about.
Yeah, sure.
Really?
Okay. Well, this has been great, and I look forward to continuing it. And if there's no other comments, I need a motion to include all materials submitted into the record.
Do we get any?
Yes, so moved.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. If there's no objections, we are adjourned.
Who brought the jam?
I was here when I got here. Gave it to us, the Mallards?
Yeah, the Harmony folks.
You still bring us presents?